Let's do that hockey.
Welcome to Dauber Prospects Report, a member of the Hockey Podcast Network. This is report number 50. I'm Victor Nuno, one of the co-hosts here, and with me is Peter Harling. How are you, Pete?
I'm good, Victor, as always. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, you know, and Dynasties, it's finals week. I'm in three, made it all the way to the final in three. One of them is our DPR show. Mm-hmm. Pretty excited about that. Me and Wayne's World kind of cruise through the regular season and now Clash of the Titans. I don't know how it's going to go, but it's going to be fun.
Well, the Toronto St. Pat's took me out in short order. Round one and done. Thank you very much, Pete.
Yeah, you guys are both out in the mid-tier thing that we have set up. But it's okay. There's always next year, right?
Yep. Yeah, hockey season's winding down. You got trade deadlines on gone. You've got regular seasons winding up in CHL and collegiate hockey. We should do a show on that next week, maybe. And then it's going to be onto the playoffs.
That's going to be fun. And in today's report, we're going to talk about some players that I watch live. That's right. I do go to rinks and watch hockey live sometimes, too. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So that should be a good time. This episode is brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network and DraftKings. Follow at HockeyPodNet for more great hockey podcasts. You can use the DraftKings promo code THPN for listening to the show. More on that in a bit. We're also proudly sponsored by Fantrax, the ultimate league manager for any dynasty sport you play. It's completely customizable for however you want to set up your league, from scoring categories, an amazing draft room to host the draft, draft pick trading, and a treasury option, plus so much more. Use our promo code to sign up for a free league using the link fantrax.com/DPR show. All right, Pete. So I set this up based on the AHL game I went to, the Barracuda versus Coachella Valley Firebirds, the AHL Barracuda team is the closest to me, so easiest access to watch some of these. I don't really have any junior teams around me, so that's we're kind of limited in terms of our options. But there's some good players on the Barracuda and also on the Coachella Valley, so we'll talk through some of these. How's that sound?
Sounds good, my dude. I think your eye test will translate better than my analytical counterpoint, but we'll try. We'll see how it goes.
We're going to do our best.
Losers always whine about their best. Winners go home and the prom queen.
So the first player I want to talk about is Thomas Bordaleau, who is 24% rostered on Fantrax. And at the time that I saw him, he was still with the Barracuda. He has since been promoted to the Sharks and has actually looked pretty good. He had a 2-goal game. He's kind of been quiet ever since. Yeah, he had a goal and then in one game and then 2 goals with the Sharks. So it's been an interesting call up. Since then, it hasn't been so good. But we're going to talk about what I saw from him. And obviously, I've watched him at other points. So we'll kind of try to blend all that together. He was really good in this game. He didn't have any points. But I was watching specific for some things about Bordaleau because he is a smaller player, 5'10", 174 pounds. And he looks a little bit small out there. But my question with him has always been, can he leverage his size to be successful? Can he be a center in the NHL? Can he fend off bigger, stronger opponents? These are questions that I always have when I watch Bordaleau, because I don't have questions about his playmaking. He's really smart with the puck. He's really creative, got a pretty decent shot. You know, his offense, I think, can translate pretty well, but can he do all the other things? And he did some things really well, I thought. He hung on to the puck when he needed to. He used his body to kind of shield it. He, you know, absorbed checks when he needed to. And in general, he was able to possess the puck and extend possessions in that way, which I thought was good. Sometimes when there was sort of unnecessary contact, he would kind of avoid it, which I thought was okay. But there were times down in the corner where he needed to fight for a loose puck, and he pretty much always lost those battles. And I've seen that from him in other games too. So that continues to be an issue. He's certainly not going to be that guy that gets down in the corner, retrieves pucks, and extends possessions that way. But what he does do really well is when pressure's on him, he moves the puck really quickly. He kind of slips puck between skates, between feet, and, you know, kind of creates opportunities that way for players to skate into or on breakouts. So he's really good at moving the pace of play, and especially with bigger guys that are coming to check him, he's good at kind of moving the puck before that happens, or moving the puck and then taking the hit. So those kind of things rarely lead to a turnover, but the stuff in the corner when the game gets really sort of slows down, he definitely struggles with that. It's interesting looking at his PNHLE, which has, you know, and Mason has these cool spider graphs to show some of his other contributions. It's interesting that his blocks tend to be pretty decent for a forward, and he tends to, you know, contribute in more of the offensive categories. Definitely not a hitter and not the biggest shooter, but he has been a bigger shooter in the AHL. So I think his perifs will be generally not amazing, but he has some, you know, shots and blocks. He also has generally been a strong faceoff guy as he's coming up in the ranks. But when I watched him that game, he didn't win too many. He actually kind of struggled a little bit and didn't take a ton of them. So that may be waning a little bit. So for me, the question really remains, can he be a second line center? I don't think he's a top line center, but is he a 3C or is he maybe like a second line winger kind of thing? I'm still not really sure. I think I have more questions after watching him more closely. I think realistically, he's probably more of a middle six winger or center. And looking at some of his play driving numbers in the NHL so far with this limited sample size of 100 even strength minutes, he looks kind of NHL average, which is good for a young player. That's not bad. But he isn't like blowing the doors off or anything. So I still think he has decent upside because in the right situation with the right players and a more depth to support him, because I think trying to leverage him as a top line center is not ideal, you know, but if he had a couple of other good centers in front of him, I think he could be an excellent 3C, maybe a decent 2C. But what do you think, Pete, about Thomas Bortolo?
I like him. I get some Kent Johnson vibes from him when I watch him. I think those are big comparable players. I'm thinking he's more top six, though, than bottom six. I mean, he was really good on a stacked Michigan roster when he was there. I really enjoyed watching him there. And as good as a lot of the players are on the team that he played there that year, he was one player that kind of stood out to me regularly, doing impressive things. And that impression has kind of stuck with me. He was also really impactful at the World Juniors when he made it with the USA on their roster as a teenager. It is also very impressive that he played in the World Championships as well as a teenager. Those are two impressive feathers in his cap to go along with his stellar NCAA production. And so far since then, he's played 102 career games, and he's got 69 points in the American Hockey League, where he's been developing and adjusting his game to the pro level very well, to your point above. In 27 career NHL games, he's got 12 points as well, averaging only about 14 minutes per game in that span. In our Dauber Prospects organizational rankings that we have been working on, I scored him as a 7, which projects him into a top 6 role. So I'm sticking to the, I think he's going to make it in a top 6 capacity. The consensus score from him was slightly lower, just over 6.1. So some people were a little bit more hesitant to go all in on this guy. And in terms of him making it as a center, he's got some pretty stiff competition there with Will Smith, Eklund, Quinton, Musty, Bystedt and Enstrom, who we talked about on the last episode, the trade deadline one. So, you know, there's a bunch of candidates there, and I think those guys all would make better centers than Bortolo here. So I think he's going to make it on the wing, and the fact that you're telling me that he's struggling in faceoff wins just kind of further encourages him to be on a wing role there, especially shot blocking, right? The winger covers the point up high. If he's not afraid to step in front of that and block a lane and maybe get himself a breakaway off a block shot rebound, then that's all good. He's the kind of guy who knows what to do on a breakaway. So what's his Fantrax rostership there? I think it was like 24%, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's about right on, considering the depth of, you know, the most of the leagues that are on Fantrax. That's a pretty high rostership for a guy that's not in the NHL regularly. But I think he will be in short order. I think we're talking about a couple Sharks prospects here. And one of the things that I'll probably reoccur in my comments is a lot of opportunity with this team. And they've got a number of expiring contracts at the end of the season. So there's guys who will have the door open for them, and they just need to step in and seize a role. It's interesting that you said that he's been called up since then. He's in the NHL right now. I think that makes a lot of sense, right? You know, play him out in the NHL regular season for what's left in the schedule here, and see how he does, see how close he is, give him a shot, and then you'll have a better idea what you need to fill in the offseason. Like, he is ready, top six, let him go now. Or, you know what? I know we're not going to contend next year, San Jose Sharks, as Stanley Cup contenders, but, you know, we still got to have NHL quality guys on the roster. So let's not ruin him, give him another year of the American Hockey League. Those kind of decisions, I think, that you need a little bit more, like you said, a little more data would be nice here.
Yeah, definitely. And I, for reference, rated him a 5 on our Denver Prospect Organization rank, so I had him a little bit lower. And I do think, with the context of Smith, Edstrom, and Bisted, I think that he does fit below Smith and ahead of Bisted, Edstrom in terms of offensive upside. But I think Bisted and Edstrom make a lot more sense down the middle. They're big dudes, can win faceoffs, yeah. You know, all of that. I don't think Musty or Eklund are centers. And I mean, actually, I think there's still even questions about Smith, but he probably is. And then, yeah, I think putting Bordalo on the wing and letting him do his playmaking, you know, thing that he's really good at makes a lot more sense, and let someone like Bisted or Edstrom kind of, you know, do the heavy lifting of play driving and all that. So there's still a good upside there. I definitely don't quibble with the 7. I have a little bit more concern, I guess. Now I want to switch the conversation to goalies, because the Barracuda have a lot of goalies that they've used over the past couple years. And it just seems like they, for a long time, they were acquiring all these different goalies and just kind of throwing a bunch at the wall and seeing what stuck. And, you know, I think they actually got a good one here. So Eetu Mäkiniemi is another one that they've been playing. Magnus Crona, who is in the NHL right now, is another guy. And they just signed Devin Cooley, who both those guys played in the NHL. But that's not who started this game. Georgi Romanov is who played. And he's kind of interesting, because he's 1% Fantrax off rostered, so widely available. And he's 24 years old. He was never drafted. He's 6'5", 207 pounds. He is huge. And he looks all of that in the net. He is massive. It seems like, how are they ever going to score on this guy? Because he's so big. So he really impressed me, too. It wasn't just that he was big. He moved pretty well in the net. Like, he read the play so well. This game, it ended up 2-2 going to overtime, and then the Coachella Valley won in the overtime, or won in the shootout, just for reference. But I think that game could have very easily been 7-8-2. It was ridiculous how many high danger chances the Coachella Valley Firebird had. Several of them were just cross ice passes, backdoor, that he moved, tracked all the way, moved to, and blocked. Like, it was incredible. He must have had 3 or 4 like that. And it was just like, okay, that's a goal. Nope, he got there. Wow, okay. So he read the play well. He was able to move laterally really well. He had really good control. He wasn't like oversliding. And he just seemed in control of his movements, but explosive when he needed to be. And I reached out to a couple people in the organization, because I'm like, yeah, this guy looks really good. Like, what do they think of him? And the word that I got is that the organization really likes him, but they still feel like he's kind of raw and needs some reps, needs some work. So that makes sense. I mean, he's been in North America just for this season. It's important to kind of look at what he was doing before this. He didn't really play in the KHL. He's Russian, by the way, if that wasn't clear. Last two seasons, he was in the VHL, and he's been really good. 39 and 31 starts, save percentage, .919 and .907. And before that, he was kind of in the MHL, toiling around a little bit. So everywhere he's been pretty good. This season, when he came over, he was first with the ECHL, the Wichita Thunder, and it was kind of rough. I don't think there's a lot of good structure there, and sometimes it can be hard as a goalie to impress. And his raw numbers so far in this season don't look good. He's played 24 games, .329 GAA, and .896 save percentage, but it's important to emphasize that this Barracuda team is not good. The couple of guys we're going to talk about are really their only good players. So it may sound kind of bad, but if you look at his expected goals per goal conceded, which is like an expected goals, like goal save above expected number, 1.31 is where he's at. And anything above 1 is very good. So he's at 1.3, which is stellar, frankly. So that's basically saying he's well outperforming the protection that he's getting. So that's pretty nice. And looking at hockey prospecting, which definitely favors some of these Russian goalies that play professionally pretty early, his equivalency is pretty high. I mean, it went up to 63. It's trended back down a little bit to 28. He looks like a couple of guys, one of them playing in the NHL, Samuel Ersin. That's probably a pretty apt comparable. I think he could be similar to him. He's also, well, he was drafted, but Romanov is a little bit bigger than Ersin. But I think that, you know, the Sharks don't really have a clear answer moving forward in net. I think they probably like Mackenzie Blackwood as their long-term solution. They really liked what they've got out of him. That's why they did not trade him at the deadline. I think they think he can be the relatively short-term solution for him. But aside from Krona, I think that Romanov is probably the guy with the biggest upside in the system. I mean, he's big, he's got the size, the mobility, and the Sharks aren't in a hurry to trot him out into the NHL. So, and the cost of acquisition here is good, Pete. It's basically zero. 1% rostered, you could grab him. So, you know, in a deep enough league, it might be time to give Romanov a try and just, you know, see what sticks. What do you think? Any interest in Georgi Romanov?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, I'm a little bit leery on some of the Russian players, and I'm a little bit leery on goalies because I just don't really have much of an eye for them. Like you said, though, 1% is pretty low rostership, so plenty of opportunity if you are interested there. I guess I'm curious, if not interested. I've never really seen him play firsthand, so I like what you're saying about him. That, you know, that's inspiring and encouraging. But I guess my real main concern here is the quantity of competition that he faces in San Jose, which you kind of led off with. You've got Magnus Krona, Eetu Mäkiniemi, and Devin Cooley, all prospects in the system, not to mention their NHL roster has Vanecek and Blackwood on it. And only two of those guys are expiring. So I guess my interest level will go up significantly if they don't sign another goalie and they let Mäkiniemi and Cooley walk. Then I'm really okay. So they've made their decision. This guy's got a shot. So that would be inspiring for me. And he's pretty widely available in three of the leagues that I'm in, and my leagues go deep. So he's only taken in the one. So there's lots of opportunity there for me. One of the leagues, I certainly don't need any more goalie prospects, but there is opportunity in some of my other rosters. You know, I've got some guys who I'm not sure if they're going to make it or not or pan out. So he'd be another more of the same. So I think basically for me in my fantasy leagues right now, I would, like I said, I'd put him on my watch list. I'd pay attention. I see how he finishes the year. I guess we're pretty much there. The season's almost over and they're not going to make the playoffs. So his year is pretty much over. Maybe he goes in the world championships. That might be a good, interesting litmus test for him to see how he does. Actually, he's Russian. Russia's probably banned from international tournaments. So that's not even an option for him either. But then we'll see what happens in the offseason in terms of the competition there. And if they whittle that goaltending numbers down and what his role will be next year. That's my take on him.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I do know that the organization has really liked Mäkiniemi, but the guy cannot stay healthy. He's injured all the time. And he's one of the ones that's an RFA this summer. Yeah, I agree. I'll be really interested to see what they do. I have a feeling they might not re-sign him because they've just been frustrated with him. Romanov has played better. They have a lot of other depth. So, yeah, we'll see. They might. And then that'll be interesting. But I think it's more likely that maybe they move on from him and just kind of see what they have in Romanov. And yeah, they're going to have to bring Cooley and or Krona back down once the other goalies are healthy in the NHL. So it'll be interesting to see. All right, that's plenty of goalie talk. Daniil Gushin is the next guy we're going to talk about. The goose is loose. He is a really fun player to watch. He's also on the smaller side, 5'10", 180. I believe when he was drafted, he was like 5'8". And there were a lot of people that just wrote him off. But man, he's really come along, you know, since he was drafted in the third round back in 2020. He had a really weird development because he was in the USHL and then he was going to go to the OHL, but then the OHL didn't play that year in 2020. So then he went back to the USHL and then finally went to Niagara in 2021-22, where he was really good and then basically turned pro after that. And he's been really strong in the AHL ever since turning pro. He even had a couple of NHL games. Last season he had two. This season he had two. Maybe they're just keeping him at two every year. I don't know. But In the AHL so far, he has 83 points in 114 games. That's really strong production on, again, a pretty bad AHL Barracuda team. So he's definitely one of the bright spots, one of the offensive catalysts that they have, which there are not many. So he's definitely, when you're watching the game, he definitely catches your eye more than a lot of people. He did not score in this game that I watched, but he had several good chances. One of the things I always look at with players like this is, are they struggling with the pace of the game? There were a lot of players that I saw that seemed to struggle with the pace at the AHL, but Daniil Gushin was not one of them. He actually seemed to be ahead of the game, and so was Bordalo. They knew what they wanted to do before the puck came to them. They made really good plays, really good passes. They, you know, were really skilled with the puck and their offensive creativity. So I really like that about him. His hockey prospecting doesn't look so great anymore. He's kind of trended down to be sort of a low chance of being a star. And looking at the FHL card that I have for him, he shoots a fair amount in the AHL and blocks a fair amount. He doesn't hit a lot, but that gives him a somewhat of a peripheral floor with the shots and blocks, and his points upside is still pretty decent. I actually wrote about him earlier last fall for EP Ringside, if you want to check that out. And kind of what I was looking at is, where does he fit into the NHL with the team? Because he's not someone that you really would want in your bottom six. He's not a big guy. He's not a checker. He is fast. He's kind of, he could be like a penalty killer, but he's not someone that's like a checking, you know, line type of player. He's a skill player. He needs to kind of be in the top six. And that's kind of the word I got from people that I talked to as well. So, you know, when they brought him up, they didn't really have a space for him. He might get a call up again here soon because, you know, with some injuries and trades that they've done, maybe they give him a little bit longer look. But yeah, I think he's really skilled. He just needs to find the right opportunity and deployment. But I think there's still some points upside here. But I'm not sure that, you know, he's not like a for sure, you know, top guy on your roster. More like a, if this guy, if everything breaks right, he could be, you know, a decent 60 plus point guy. I had him rated as the eighth best player in their prospect pool. So shows you I'm a little bit lower on him, but there's still some upside there. What do you think of Daniil Gushin, Pete?
Yeah, so he's 10% Fantrax rostered overall. And like you said, he's Russian born, but basically North American developed. He's been here since 2018. And like you said, 3 years in the USHL, then another in the O. And now he's in his second season of American Hockey League production. And, you know, he's been a point a game or better at all the levels of junior that he's played at. 7.73 point per game pace in the American Hockey League through 114 games and 0.75 point per game pace in only four games in the NHL. But that's still translatable, right? Like, he's carrying over the offensive production from the American Hockey League into the NHL. And a very small sample size, albeit, but, you know, he's doing it. He is short, but, you know, he plays a relatively physical game, not a monster with the hits, but he's not a shrinking violet by any stretch of the imagination. So he's one of those guys that's short, but not small, I'd say. You'd probably be able to say that with a little bit more authority, having seen him live more recently than I have. You know, he's a reliable, hardworking, defensively responsible player, as well as being very skilled. I ranked him as a 6 overall, so that's a better than 50-50 chance of making it to the NHL, but probably not in a top 6 role, right? Like, you know, if you got to score a 7 or more, I think, to be considered a top 6 player. So there's the rub that you were talking about. Is he good enough to be a top 6 player? Hard to say. You know, we'll see if he gets an opportunity, if he can seize that role, and if he can't, can he change his game and carve out a niche for himself as a bottom six player? And guys do it. It happens. So we'll see which way it goes, if either or neither. I did rank him, oh, I said that, 6 overall. The consensus for him was 4.8, by the way, for 10th overall in the Sharks system. So I was a little bit higher on him than the consensus, which means he's definitely a player that I have time for. He's totally rostered in all the leagues that I'm in, so I can't add him for nothing. But I think he's close to being NHL ready, and I think he should get a look next year. Because like I said before, the Sharks have 5 unrestricted free agent forwards potentially coming off the books. So there's going to be opportunities for some of these guys we're talking about and some of the guys in the organizational top 10 rankings to graduate to an NHL position. And it wouldn't be a shock to me to see this guy being one of the players that takes that role.
Definitely. Decent upside there. Love to see it. We'll see. I'm rooting for Agusha, and I think he's fun. I just wanted to briefly touch on some of the other Sharks, in case you were wondering. Tristan Robbins, Jack Stanika, who, yes, does play for the Sharks organization now, in case you forgot. Ozzie Weisblatt and Brandon Coe. Weisblatt actually got loaned to the... Who did he get loaned to? He got loaned to the Milwaukee Admirals. That's right. Which was weird. It was funny. It seemed like some of the reporters in the Sharks organization didn't even realize that he wasn't there anymore and he was loaned to a different team. They said it was to get him playoff experience, which, yeah, I don't know. Weisblatt definitely seems more like a bottom six checker. Yeah, I don't think that there's too much offense there. Robbins is a really interesting player. He's fast and he works really hard at, you know, puck recovery, but I don't really see him as that relevant in the NHL. Stanika strikes me just as a classic quad A player. He is pretty good in the AHL, but whenever we see him in the NHL, he doesn't seem like he can quite hang or leverage the skills quite the same way. The one that's most interesting to me is Brandon Coe. And you saw some Brandon Coe back in your day, because he's an OHL guy. And he's kind of interesting, I think, of all their players. Hold on, I'm just trying to pull up the right thing here. Where did you go? Where did you go, Coe? There he is. All right, so yeah, Brandon Coe. He's a big guy, 6'4", 190 pounds. And yeah, he played for North Bay Battalion in the OHL. He actually got some AHL time early in his career when the OHL was shut down. He was in the AHL. I remember watching him there, and he seemed pretty overwhelmed at that time. He wasn't quite ready for that jump, which is fair, because it was really early. I think he was still 19 at the time. That's when they got an exemption. Then he went back to North Bay and put up almost 2 points per game. That was good. So far in two seasons with the Barracuda, at almost 100 games, he's at like under 30 points. So it hasn't been too impressive. He looks pretty slow out there. Like, he has a hard time keeping up with the pace. But when the puck does come to him and he can slow things down and he can unleash his shot, and he's such a big frame. Like, I think in the right situation, Brandon Coe could still be a decent depth scorer in the NHL, but he needs someone to like move the puck for him and to kind of like set him up for his shot. But he is really good, you know, down low in the corners at kind of retrieving pucks. The things that Bordalo is not good at, Coe can kind of make up for some of the difference. So there is potentially a role for him there, but I also think that it's probably more likely that he's just not much. So I didn't really think much of these other guys. I'm not even sure they're really worth talking too much about, but I don't know if you have something to say about Coe, because he's someone maybe you watched back in the day.
Yeah, I got a couple of battalion players I can sneak in at the end of the episode here, because I just watched them live. So one of the interesting things about the Brampton Battalion, Victor, is they remind me a little bit of the London Knights in that they favor the older players. And Coe had a breakout season in his overage year. He missed his final season because of COVID. That season was canceled, but he came back for his overager and, you know, tore the OHL apart, over 100 points as a, you know, a massive adult playing against teenagers, against high school kids, basically. So, you know, it's kind of hard for me to say that I absolutely loved him coming out of junior, because, you know, he was okay. He got drafted, but he's okay in his first 4 years there. But is that because he's a slow developer, or because he was in a sheltered role, or because, and then it wasn't until he was, you know, really advanced above the rest of the league that, and he had some American Hockey League experience from the lockout season, that he really dominated. So is he actually that good? So now that we're actually getting an opportunity to see him play in the American Hockey League, and he's got, you know, 11 goals through two seasons and 16 points through 60 games this year. So I'm not really overly impressed with him, unless I'm looking at a player who has, you know, really, really strong peripherals that he's going to check more than just the goals and assist boxes for him in my fantasy league. The other guys who you talked about there, not really a lot of interest in them. I think we're all pretty much convinced that Stegnik is just not going to make it. Ozzie Weisblatt doesn't have fantasy relevance. And Tristan Robbins, Joel Henderson was super high on him in his draft year, but, you know, looking like he's not going to make it either. So yeah, that's my take on those guys. We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. This week, the Tampa Bay Lightning are favored over the Vegas Golden Knights with a puck line of +114 for Tampa versus -135 for Vegas. Download DraftKings Sportsbook app with the code THPN. New customers bet just $5 on the NHL and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with the code THPN. Brown is yours.
All right, let's talk about Coachella Valley. They had two very clear players to talk about, and that was Shane Wright and Ryan Winterton. So we'll talk about Shane Wright first. And I know you've seen a whole lot of Shane Wright because he was playing in your hometown there. But seeing him a little bit, you know, closer to where he is right now, you know, closer to the NHL and playing professionally is pretty interesting. First time I've gotten to see him live. He's a really fun player to watch. He's really smart. And I think what I didn't really understand is how strong he is. Like it seemed like guys were kind of going at him, you know, like seemed like he was the best player for Coachella, and the Barracuda guys were at times, you know, trying to hit him every opportunity they could. And they did a couple times. He got knocked off the puck at one point after he had a shot and kind of went sliding into the boards pretty hard. And he popped right back up. I was like, whoa, that was pretty cool. He took a puck to the mouth and went off and then came right back soon after that. I was impressed by how calm, strong, and confident he was. I also have seen in the past and seen the criticism that he isn't overly dynamic. And I definitely saw that. There were times where I thought like, oh, you could really like make this guy miss, or you could, you know, do something better with the puck. And he didn't. But he always tended to make the smart play, you know, like he wouldn't make a higher risk play that could have been more flashy or maybe more dangerous, but he generally made really smart plays that were effective, which is, you know, which is good. And he created a lot and, you know, that's good to see. Didn't result in any actual points, but he created a lot of chances. There were a couple of close ones that he was a part of. And so, yeah, it seemed he definitely seemed like one of the best players out there, which is, of course, you want to see for one of the top prospects who is expected to, you know, be an impact player at the next level. I could definitely see all of that. And I definitely didn't sour my opinion at all about Shane Wright. I still have some questions about just how amazing his production is going to be at the NHL level because of some of his lack of dynamism. But overall, I still think he's got really high upside. I rated him as a 7 on our Darwin prospects poll. On our organizational ranks. Well, we'll see what you think about that. But, you know, his hockey prospecting still looks very high, like 54% chance of being a star. His PNHL has trended down a little bit, but he's still looking more like a 60-ish point player. I think that's kind of where I would think of him, more like that 60-ish player rather than 70 or more. But I think there's maybe upside for closer to 70. And the Fantasy Hockey Life card that I have for him shows that his shots per 60 are pretty high in the AHL, and his blocks are actually pretty high too. He doesn't hit a whole lot, so his peripheral floor is average. And in this card, we have minor penalties measured as, you know, if you don't take penalties, it's a good thing, and so he's not doing a whole lot of that, so that's good. And his points upside is pretty good. So I don't know. I think that there's some disconnect here between the PNHL and the hockey prospecting. And I'm not sure exactly how to marry that. I guess the question is he closer to a 60-point guy or a 70-plus point guy? I kind of feel like I would lean closer to 60, 65 if I had to, but I'm curious what you think, Pete, about Shane Wright.
Yeah, so like you said, I'm super familiar with Shane, and I think your analysis is pretty spot on. He's really cerebral with the puck, and he's a very strong player. I mean, the kid's tough, like not going to win a lot of fist fights, tough. But you can give it to him and he can take it kind of stuff. He's got ice in his veins too. Like he's super cool with the puck. and he's got like a zero panic threshold, but yet he maintains a high sense of urgency and compete level. He does a really like masterful job of blending those two things together. You know, given the expectations and hype around him since he was 15 years old, I think his dynamic puck skill and offensive upside have landed below expectation for where we thought he'd be at this time, right? We all thought he'd be the first overall draft pick, go straight to the NHL, and be looking at 60 points as a rookie with an upside of, you know, 90 points as at the peak of his powers in his career. And I think it's safe to say that most people are resigned to thinking that those expectations are no longer realistic. Now, that's not to say that he's not going to make it to the NHL and that he wouldn't be an impactful player when he gets there. I just think that his actual NHL value outweighs his fantasy value. He's the kind of guy that if you were doing an NHL team expansion draft, you'd be very interested in him. But if you're doing a fantasy draft, you'd be more interested in some other guys, which is fine. Not so great for fantasy hockey. But I agree, his upside projection for me is now an elite second line center kind of player. A player like David Krejci is a good comparable, I think. You know, I think he would be very effective in a second line center, giving you good offense, good energy, good leadership, good defensive play, a good all-round player. And if you paired him with a really dynamic offensive winger, like a super skilled winger, that if you just give him a little bit of time and space, and Shane can do that. Shane can give players time and space and scoring opportunities. Then, you know, I think that would be the best case scenario for him in both NHL and fantasy. I ranked him as a 8, I think, in the organizational rankings list. So I'm still pretty high on him. I think his certainty of making the NHL is very, very high. And I think his fantasy upside is still very good, not elite, but still very good, right? Like David Krejci was great. He'd be good for, you know, 60 points in a full season on the Bruins when he had options like Marchand and Pasternak as wingers to play with. So I think a lot about that as a parallel for where I see Shane Wright.
I love that comparable. I think that is, if you have Shane Wright as your second line center, you're really happy.
You're doing all right.
He'd be an awesome second line center. If you want him to be your first line center, I think he could do it, but yeah. you may not be a contender. You know, it depends on who your wingers are there. I think that he could be great in the right situation, but yeah, he's for sure an NHLer. I think, you know, they're just giving him some time. The team, you know, had some other depth options. I don't think that him being in the AHL right now is really a mark against him or anything like that. And yeah, you had him an 8, I had him a 7. We're kind of similar. I think there's still upside there because in the right situation, he could be great. But yeah, think about Krejci. Think about the production he had. Probably a similar trajectory. There could be some up years, but the floor is like really high with Shane Wright. Like they're just going to get a decent amount of points every year. It just may not be super high.
Yeah, and anyone thinking that because he hasn't made the NHL yet, you know, he didn't go first overall. He's got 2 years now where he hasn't been able to crack the Seattle roster and they're an expansion team. Like, give your head a shake. The kid is 21 years old or whatever, 20 years old. Like, he's doing just fine. His development in the American Hockey League is right where he needs to be right now. And everyone develops at different paces and at different times. And I have no concerns that he's going to be a good NHL player.
Give your head a shake. I love that. Figure it out. All right, last guy, Ryan Winterton. And he's another OHLer that you've probably seen. And he was drafted 67th overall, third round in 2021. So the year after Shane was drafted, he was with Hamilton, mostly of the OHL. And then in his last season, he got traded to London, where his production went down a little bit. So did some of his opportunity and deployment for that great team. And this is his first season playing professionally. So big jump for him. He did get in 3 NHL games, didn't do anything except get 1 minus, but he's been primarily with Coachella Valley all season, 52 games, 31 points, 19 of those goals. And I could see why. Like he's you know, he's got good size. He moves pretty well. What I saw from Winterton is that he really kind of knows how to move and how to get in the right spots to shoot, to score. He, you know, has good hands and tight. He can really move the puck. He doesn't move with the puck very quickly, but he knows kind of where the puck is going to go, and he's good to get in the right spot. He got 5 shots off. A couple of them are really high quality. He did not score in this game, but he definitely had a lot of chances, some of the better chances, I would say. And I could see him scoring. You know, he has scored a decent amount in the AHL. And, you know, overall, I'm not sure if I caught him on a bad night, because some of the production in the AHL has been good, but there were some compete things that kind of bothered me at times. Like, he would get into the right spot and then something would happen and he'd kind of just, you know, like, not really try to get the puck back or anything like that. So he's definitely not the guy who's like dog on the bone, getting after the puck, trying to retrieve it or recover it. He doesn't really do that kind of thing. When the puck gets in the offensive zone, he kind of like tries to find that soft spot to get a shooting, to get in a shooting lane and to unleash his shot, or like try to make a good play. So, I mean, that's fine. He's just a certain kind of player. He's not the kind that you put in the bottom six and go retrieve the puck. You know, he kind of needs someone to help him out a bit. And I think in a certain context, he could be okay. I was wondering too, like, did he just like, because 31 points in 52 games is pretty decent AHL production. I was thinking, are a lot of these secondary assists? Nope. They're almost all primary. Only 4 of them are A2s. So can't say that against him. But looking at some of his analytics, his hockey prospecting looks really low, like 1% chance of being a star. His PNHLE has him looking at like a 44-point NHLer, which is pretty low. He does have a little bit more of a peripheral floor. Looking at his fantasy hockey life player card, he doesn't shoot a ton, although he shot 5 times in this game. So from what I saw, he shot a lot. But on average, he doesn't shoot that much. He does hit, though, more than he shoots, and he blocks a fair amount. So his peripheral floor is pretty decent if and when he actually makes it. And the fact that he got 3 NHL games was kind of a nice feather in his cap. Overall, though, I have him rated as a 4 in the organizational ranks. I think you also have him as a 4. So we're both kind of lower on him. And his PNHLE being 44, they're just all 4s here. Feet, all 4s. So 44, I think, is probably kind of accurate for him. That's kind of what I maybe think of him. But I don't know. What do you think? Maybe he's closer to like a 50-ish point guy, but I'm not sure there's too much upside beyond that. What do you think on Ryan Winterton, Pete?
Well, let's see. He's 3% Fantrax rostered, which I find kind of surprisingly low, to be honest with you, for an early third round pick. He was almost a second round pick. He was like 67th or something like that. And a player with his resume. So let's talk about Ryan Winterton's resume for a sec here. He won a gold medal and had 4 points in 7 games at the U18s with Team Canada in 2021. He won an OHL championship in 2022 with Hamilton, and he had 6 points in 5 Memorial Cup games, and they only lost in the final. He was the OHL playoff scoring leader the following season with London when he had 29 points in 21 games, and they didn't even make it to the Memorial Cup that year. And he's on pace for 24 goals as an American Hockey League rookie. Those are all very impressive achievements in his career. But my concern, the other side of the coin, is with him has always been his health. You know, he lost so much development time in junior. He missed the entire COVID season, of course, no fault of his own, but he still missed it. And then the following 2 seasons, he only played 37 and 34 games in the last 2 years of his junior career due to injuries. So kid's injured significantly a lot. So in the OR rankings, I scored him a 4 versus a consensus of 2.2. So a little bit higher than the average there, kind of with you on that one, as you said. But overall, I think my concern or lack of interest with him has been because of him being a Band-Aid boy. But a full year of health this year has him gaining my attention again. And for now, he's watch list material for me, unless I want to gamble on him in one of my leagues that has a weaker prospect pool. So that's kind of where I'm sitting on Ryan Winterton, Victor. Can I ask you about another player that we didn't prep for, put you on the spot here?
Sure.
I've been very interested in Logan Morrison. I watched him play with Ryan Winterton in Hamilton, actually. They won a championship together. And he signed as a free agent and is playing in his first year of American Hockey League. So he's, you know, he's a little bit undersized and he's not the fleetest of foot, as I recall, but his hockey sense and vision and playmaking skills at the OHL level were off the chart. Did you notice him at all, good or bad, in the game that you went to?
I did not. And he didn't score or shoot or really do anything memorable, as far as I can tell, looking at the game log. He does look like he's doing very well. For Coachella, it's also important to know, Coachella Valley is a very good team. I mean, they almost won the AHL. Is it the Calder Cup? They almost won that last year. They just came up short, and they're really good again this year. So, you know, they score a lot. And so I'm not saying that Logan Morrison is just benefiting from being on a good team, but he didn't stand out in necessarily one way or the other when I watched him, but he does 39 points in 57 games. That's pretty strong AHL production in your first season in the AHL. So you got to like that.
Yeah. Yeah. If you get to another game, put him on your watch list for me. I'll give you a little bit more heads up than in the middle of the show. You got time to talk about two of the guys I saw?
Sure. Yeah.
All right. I went to, as I mentioned, the Brampton Battalion. We're in Kingston this weekend, so I went and I caught them because they had a couple of guys who were right at the top of the league in scoring, and they're both draft eligible, so I was interested in that. Now, they're not first-time draft eligibles, so this is really interesting. So the first guy I want to talk about, Anthony Romani. He is leading the OHL in scoring, and with the virtue of 53 goals and 52 assists. That's a really nice balance for 105 points in 65 games, or 1.62 points per game. What he is a 6'1", 180, so decent size. He's right wing, and he's only 18 years old. Last year was his draft year, and you did not hear his name in Nashville. In his draft year, though, he had 43 points in 65 games. Now, like I said earlier, North Bay had a deep roster last season. They are a very good team. It was very veteran-laden. It was his draft and sophomore season. And so now he's getting a lot more minutes and first line deployment, as you know, a lot of the players graduated from their roster last year. And he's just exploded offensively. And so remember, again, it's important to note, he's not a 20-year-old feasting on kids. He's still only 18. So this breakout season that he's having isn't because he's so much more physically mature and has, you know, pro experience in a couple of games in the American Hockey League or anything like that. Why I think he wasn't drafted is likely because of his off-puck game. It's pretty weak. In the defensive zone, he's a bystander, right? He's watching, and he does a lot of guarding open ice. And there's a couple times where I'm looking at him and the front's had it in their zone and he's over by the boards in the point. I don't know. There's no one there. He wasn't covering any guy. And, you know, if he was available for an outlet pass, that makes sense. But you have to have possession of the puck in order for that to work. So I'm not really sure what he was doing there. So he does a lot of waiting for loose pucks to come for him or for other people to do the heavy lifting in scrums and feed him the puck. But when he gets it, he makes a count, right? He's got really good first step, good acceleration, and he's an accomplished passer as well. But he can be physically worked off the puck pretty easily as well in puck cycles or board battles. So that was a little concerning for someone his size. He's a competent skater. Like I said, he's got good acceleration and separation ability. His bread and butter, though, is his shot. Look out, this kid can shoot the puck. It is so pro level now. And he's got one more year of OHL development to go. He did score a goal in the game that I was at. It was a really nice 3-on-2 rush where the center for North Bay was carrying up the middle, did a little drop pass to Wakely, and I thought Wakely was going to shoot it, and I didn't even see the lane, the passing lane that he saw, and he fed it almost immediately over to Romani, who was in full stride, going way faster than all of the back-checking Frontenac players. And he put it right in his wheelhouse, and in stride, he one-timed it, went down on one knee, and just, there's no chance the goalie was going to stop that. It's just, that was a pro-level goal on a junior goalie, and it looked every bit of it. So he's an NHL draft re-entry guy, and I'm really confident that he's going to be selected in this year's draft. Not high, but he'll get picked for sure. I'm thinking the third round in the 100-plus range is a really good target for NHL teams if they want to take a shot on this kid and see if they can't grind out some of his off-puck abilities and game. But what he could be, I think, is a really sneaky good fantasy pick if you're in a league that goes deep. I mean, you're getting a guy that's a 100-plus point player, and he's got one less year to go in junior than all of the first-time draft-eligible guys. So that's something that I really like. I pulled up his hockey prospecting card as well. Some of his comps from his draft year of note, you've got Jesse Gabriel. You might remember that name. Tyce Thompson, the younger brother of Tage. Chandler Stevenson, who's exceeding expectations in Vegas. Full comps, less impressive. Landon Sleggert, Carter Verhaeghe. Right now, he's standing at a 7% star probability and a 39% NHL probability. So, you know, the metrics and the comps here aren't very favorable. And I can understand why, because, like I said, his off-puck game has got some work. But offensively, I think he's a pretty established player. Do you have any comments on Anthony Romani off the top here? And I didn't give you any opportunity to prep for this.
Oh, yeah, not really. But I do think it's interesting that he's really, really young. And in terms of when you're looking at why does someone not get drafted in their original draft year, a July 12th birth date means that he was really young his entire draft year. He was 17 the whole time. So, you know, giving him an extra year, he's pretty much similar to the guys that were taken last year. You know, he's a little bit more older, a little more mature. Like you said, he's not like he's 20 playing against, you know, teenagers. So, yeah, I definitely agree. These numbers certainly suggest like he'll get drafted probably in rounds 3 through 5 or something like that. And, you know, maybe have a decent shot if the coach can improve his off puck game. He's not small, you know, like you said, he seems like he's got his feet can move when he wants to. So definitely seems like someone who's trending up and, you know, could be a decent depth piece.
Right. If this were his actual draft season, I mean, he'd be much more widely discussed, I think, because he's leading the OHL in scoring, right?
Mm-hmm.
His line mate, Dalen Walkley, also very interesting. Another player who's been passed over. This guy's been passed over twice now. So he's got one more kick at the can here. He's third overall in OHL scoring with 98 points. He's the center on that line. He's 20 years old and he's got decent size too. He's 6'1", 190. So that's not a problem. So he's still, like I said, he's 20 and he's still draft eligible, but because of that, he might slip through the draft. I'm less confident that he will get selected than I am about Romani. And what might happen there is teams might roll the dice and not select him and then try and invite him the next, like the following week to their development camps and see if they can't see how he plays in competition there and maybe offer him a contract, see if they can sign him as a free agent instead. But like I said earlier, North Bay is like London in that they lean heavily on veteran players. So when I look at his career in the OHL, his rookie season for starters was non-existent because of COVID. So his draft year was his rookie year and he scored 20 goals and 34 points, not drafted though. And like, you know, he's a younger player and they're leaning on veterans. And then last year was his D plus 1 year and he scored 30 goals, which is pretty impressive as well, 49 points. And overall, that was sixth in the team in scoring, and he finished behind 5 NHL drafted players. So this is just an example of what I mean by they lean heavily on older players. Matvei Petrov, Kyle Jackson, Ty Nelson, Josh Bloom, and Kyle McDermott all finished ahead of him in North Bay scoring. This year, though, those guys are all gone. He's the number one center, and he is a playmaking wizard. His vision and hockey sense really stood out in this game. And his chemistry with Romani is really impressive. Like they know where they are, where they're going. They got some set plays and they do them at such a high level that there really was other times where like there was no defending what they were bringing to the table at the OHL level. Like players of that age level aren't capable of anticipating and defending these guys, which is why they're at the top of the league in scoring. Besides his passing ability, though, he's got a pretty good shot, right? 30 goals last year says it all. He's really aggressive and committed defensively, too. He backchecked hard as opposed to Romani. He was in it. Now he's the center, so he's got to skate back a little further, but that doesn't always mean that the centers do that. And he's got decent size and physicality. So, you know, he's a player who I've got some time for. I'll be watching in Vegas to see if he gets selected. And if he does, and I'm in a couple of leagues that are 20 plus teams that go five rounds. If he gets drafted, he's a player. If I got a fifth round pick, I'll be looking at him as an option, because, you know, any player in that range is a long shot. But this guy is 20 already. So, you know, I won't have to wait long to find out if that was a wasted pick or if I found myself a gem here.
I'm just less excited about him because he's older. And yeah, so there's probably less runway. But yeah, I agree with you. Less likely he'll get drafted. Probably less total upside. But sure, you know, definitely someone to keep an eye on if he makes it onto a roster. But I'm overall less interested.
That's fair enough. Well, that's it for report number 50, everyone. Thanks very much for listening. Don't forget, we like feedback on the show. Hit us up on Twitter at @DPR_show, at @FarlingVictorNuno12, and at @Sabarin91. Those are all our handles there. And don't forget, follow the podcast that sponsors us, HockeyPodNet. And they've got a bunch of other hockey podcasts on there that are great. A lot of team-specific sites for anyone that's looking for a podcast of their favorite team. Give us a follow. Give us a subscription. Give us a 5-star review. I'm very demanding. Gimme, gimme, gimme. That's it for today, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the show and keep your stick on the ice.
Alexander Solzhenitsyn.
Yeah, I heard of him. Didn't he play hockey for the Red Wings?
Let's do that hockey.